You're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage.
Bringing you news, music, and views from the youth perspective, the things we care about straight from our mouths.
We're your hosts. I'm Maeve Wiley.
And I'm Ryan Iverson. On today's show, we are featuring true, personal stories told by Anchorage youth. All of these stories came from Diamond's annual show, Beyond the Bookends.
StoryWorks Alaska is a program that helps youth produce these stories as part of their English classes. The schools also host storytelling shows that are open to the public.
Our first storyteller, Matrika Franklin from Diamond High School, told her story at Diamond's annual show, Beyond the Bookends. She tells us about the time she learned a valuable lesson about honesty.
Okay, one thing about me is I hate doing the dishes. And ever since my older sister graduated and left the house 2 years ago, I, now the oldest child in the house, have been in charge of doing the dishes. And not only do I hate doing dishes, I'm actually kind of bad at it. When I do it, they kind of tend to break. And it's not like I don't break them because I don't like them. They just kind of happen. And in my house, I hold the record for the most number of broken dishes. And every time a dish breaks, they go, "Oh, Matrika, when did you do that?" I'm just like, "A while ago." Yeah. Anyways, the first weekend of last summer, my family and I were doing this huge house cleanup because the next week we were going to go on vacation to California. And I was in charge of the counter and the kitchen because that's what I clean best. And as I was wiping off the counter, my elbow bumped into my mom's coffee basket. And out of her coffee basket, her Polish pottery spoon fell out and cracked into two pieces. And I don't know if you guys know what Polish pottery is, but it's pottery made Poland, but it's like a creamy color. It's handmade. It's hand painted designs. You can't get that back. There's no number two of those. And I was like, "Oh, okay." I look around. Coast is clear. I put the Polish pottery spoon like in my pocket. I casually walked downstairs to my room, quietly closed the door, and I was like, okay. I took out my E6000 glue. I was like, "Okay, let me try to stick this together." But E6000 glue works a lot better on crafts and wood than it does on Polish pottery, so the thing didn't stick. And after several failed attempts, I was like, "Okay." I was freaking out. And I took the two pieces of Polish pottery spoon, I put it in a spare glasses case, I put that inside one of my winter boots, put that inside the back of my closet, closed the closet door. I was like, "Okay, out of sight, out of mind." And my family went to California, we came back, and it was out of mind. Mission accomplished. And it stayed out of mind. And a couple months later, about August, so towards the end of summer break, my mom, she's like, "Hey, I'm gonna go to the gym. You watch your younger siblings. You guys can have popcorn for a snack." So like, okay, we turn on a movie because I don't really feel like watching them. And we turn on a movie, and my little brother, he does a normal thing, takes our air popper, pops popcorn. After he's done, he puts our blue plastic popcorn bowls, put in the sink, cleans up after himself. Normal kid. On the other hand, I wanted to attempt to make kettle corn because kettle corn tastes great. And the recipe seems simple enough. You put like the corn and corn, and you put the salt and the oil and the sugar, and you're supposed to shake the pot up, but it was not easy enough when I made it because the whole batch burned. I did not burn down the house, luckily. And as I was cleaning up the burnt popcorn, I stuck the pot into the sink, and for those of you guys who don't know, hot metal and plastic melts. It means it's disaster. And I put the pot on top of the blue plastic bowl, and it melted the bowl. There's a ring of meltedness, if you will. And I separated the bowl and the pot, and I rinsed it off, and I cooled it down. I was like, "Okay, I am going to get busted for this sooner or later. But I'd rather be later than sooner." So I stuck the bowl back where it belonged in our shelf, and I went, act like nothing happened, and it lasted for a week. And everything okay, until my mom, she was like, she wants to make popcorn. She pulled the blue plastic bowl, and she was like, "Matrika, why is it melted?" I was like, "Ugh. Well, you know, when you were gone, I tried to make kettle corn, and it kind of melted." And she was obviously very upset with me, very very angry because I melted the bowl. But she was even more upset about the fact that I didn't tell her that I melted the bowl and that I probably wasn't going to tell her if I didn't get caught, which I wasn't. But, and you know, she was like, Matrika, I don't feel like I can trust you anymore because of that. And that really hit home, because my mom is one of my favorite people, and to hear her say that she didn't trust me really, really hurt. And I apologized, and she said it was okay, but you know, things still weren't very peachy. And so a week later passed, and my mom, we were kind of driving home from a like Target or something, and as we were pulling into the neighborhood, I was like, oh, hey, mom. She's like, well, what? I was like, you remember you told me I should be more honest and stuff? She's all like, yeah. Wait, what did you do? I was like, well, you see, not too long ago. Well, actually, pretty long ago, actually. I kind of broke your Polish pottery spoon. She's like, what? Wait, when? Why? Is that why I couldn't find it? When did you break it? I was like, you know, a couple months ago. It was before we went to California. She's like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. And we were pulling into my drive at the time. So I got out the car. I was like, well, thanks for the ride, Mom. And I walked into the house and, well, feeling a lot better than I did before after telling her that. And, you know, as a reminder to this day, in my closet, in a boot, in a glasses case are still the two pieces of my Polish pottery spoon. Thank you.
Thanks to Matrika Franklin for sharing that story. You're listening to In Other News on KNBA 90.3 FM. Matrika told that story at a Storyworks Alaska show at Diamond High School.
Our next storyteller, Andrea Peterson, goes to Diamond High and told her story about a night in an unfamiliar town.
When I was 11, my family went on a trip to Florida. And you know, Florida's kind of far from Alaska, so it's like a 7-hour flight. And my mom had gotten us a red-eye flight. So, and I am not one to sleep on airplanes, like, at all. Like, I'm super fidgety. Like, I try putting my legs up on the seat. I try leaning on my mom to go to sleep. And as nothing works, like, I don't fall asleep on airplanes very well. And we got to Florida, and it was, like, 7 o'clock in the morning. And we got into Fort Lauderdale, and we were going to drive to Orlando. So that's, like, a 3-hour drive. And so we did that. And my parents, when we got to the hotel, they would not let us sleep because they did not want us getting on this bad sleep schedule so we would not be, like, sleepy the next day, too. So they made us stay up that whole day, which wasn't that bad because we got to go to the beach and the pool. And our hotel was great because it had these warm cookies at the at the front desk for free. So, like, I went crazy on those. They were the best. And I remember going to dinner kind of early that night. And we got back so we could go to sleep, and we all, like, crashed by, like, 9 o'clock. And then I got up at, like, 11 o'clock, and I had the mindset of, I'm going to go get a warm cookie. So I go outside of the door, and I start walking in the hallway. And it wasn't, like, an indoor hallway like a normal hotel. It was, like, outside where it was, so there wasn't two doors on each side of the wall. It was the doors and then outside. So I got out, and I was, like, literally outside, and then I kind of look around. I was walking to the elevator, and I see my dog, and I was, like, I didn't bring my dog to Florida, but I don't really, like, go that far into it. I just kept walking, and when I get to the elevator, I press the button, and then something, like, turns on in my mind, and I was, like, okay, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. What am I doing? And my dog is gone now. And I was like, okay, I slept walk out of here, and my dog was a dream. So panic went in my mind, and I was thinking of a million things. I was like, do I go down to the lobby and get a door key? Do I go pound on the door? Do I even know what door it is? And I was thinking so many things. So I get to a door, what I thought was my door, and I start knocking on it. And no one comes for, like, a minute, and I kind of double-checked the room number, and it was not the right one. And I was like, okay, so this isn't the right one. I got to go try other ones. And so I get to what I think is, what I'm pretty sure is the right one, and I just start pounding on it. And then finally my parents open the door, and I remember that not just my mom or not just my dad came out, but both of them came to the door because they thought it was like some type of an emergency. Like, my mom said that she thought it was like the fire department knocking on the door because I was knocking so loud. And I just remember their faces. They were like, oh my gosh, what are you doing out here? Like, they were not expecting me on the other side of the door. And when I got back into the hotel room, they made me sleep in between them. So I wouldn't get out again. And I fell asleep perfectly fine, but my parents did not. They were super cautious, and my dad did some research, and it shows that sleepwalking can be caused by not getting enough sleep. So that's, I was up for like 2 days, and so that's probably why I sleptwalk. And I sleptwalked before then, but nothing like this. And and I haven't sleptwalked since, so thank you.
Thanks to Andrea for sharing that story. You're listening to In Other News on KNBA 90.3 FM. Andrea told that story at a Storyworks Alaska show at Diamond High School.
Our next storyteller, Lucas Yoakum, goes to Diamond High and told his story about proving he is just as brave as his younger brother.
Hello, I'm Lucas. Something you should probably know about me before I start. I have some pretty strong family ties in the South. So every summer, I go down there with my family, and we hang out, spend some time with my mom's extended family. And this particular summer, I have this Uncle Jack, and he's kind of like, he's a moneybags old guy, works in a big company. So he has this vacation home down in Marble Falls, Texas, and no one was using it this summer. So my family, my mom, my sister, my brother, and my uncle and I, we got the opportunity to go down and spend a week and my rich uncle's vacation home, which was pretty great. We went there, he had like a gazebo in the backyard with a TV in it, and a pool right next to that, in the middle of a beautiful neighborhood in Texas. It was pretty cool. So while we were down there, my mom decided, hey, the kids have never been to anywhere like SeaWorld, so San Antonio is a pretty short drive, so why not go to SeaWorld? So we loaded up in a tiny little car, because that's all my grandparents have, and went to SeaWorld. So it was pretty great. Like I said before, I was 10 at the time. I haven't said that yet, but I was 10 at the time. My brother was 7. My sister was even younger than that. I'm sorry, I was trying to lead into a different point. But either way. So we were all young. That's the point I was going for. And we were at SeaWorld having a really great time. Got to see the killer whale. Got to do all that cool stuff with the fish. Yeah. And so on the way out, my brother, little 7-year-old Colin, sees this big roller coaster, and he's like, Uncle Stan, I want to go on that roller coaster. And so he's like, being the responsible adult that he is, he's like, sure, buddy. He takes the 7-year-old by the hand and goes and gets in line for the roller coaster. And so he asked me, too. I'm like, no, thank you. That's something you should know about me. I'm kind of a wuss at age 10. I'm afraid of heights. Don't like to do that kind of stuff. So my brother gets on the roller coaster. He sits straight in the front. Happy little kid. My uncle tells the story about this later. As he goes over the top, the first dip, his face goes from glee to a look of pure terror as they go down. And they get their cool little picture you get when you go on roller coasters at amusement parks. So he gets off. He's like, well, that happened. I'm never going to do that again. And so he gets his picture and shows it to me. I'm like, if my 7-year-old brother can do that, what kind of a man am I if I can't get on that roller coaster? And so I say, Uncle Stan, I want to go on that roller coaster. And so, once again, very responsible man. Sure, buddy, let's go on the roller coaster. He grabs me by the hand. I sit down. I'm not as courageous as my brother. I sit in the middle car. As soon as that bar locks down, I'm like, please get me off. I did not want to be there anymore. I knew I immediately made a mistake as soon as I sat down. And so exactly what you would expect happened. On my way up, I was scared. And on the way down, I was more scared. So, but at least I got my picture, right? I got to get off. I got to go wait in line. As I was seeing all those pictures flash past, I saw my uncle. His hand was directly covering my face. So, being the smart 10-year-old that I was, I told my uncle, I want that picture. And we got back in line for the roller coaster. The bar locked down. I immediately knew I made the same mistake the second time. And the exact same thing happened. Like, I was terrified on the way up, even more so than last time, because I knew it was going to happen. And so I went over the same kind of screaming, crying that happened the first time. But at least I got my picture this time. So I got off, we waited in line. When I finally got my picture, my uncle's hand was still half in front of my face. Thank you.
Thanks to Lucas for sharing that story. I'm Maeve Wiley.
And I'm Ryan Iverson.
And you're listening to In Other News on KNBA 90.3 FM. Lucas told that story at a Storyworks Alaska show at Diamond High School.
Our next storyteller, Ben Stream, goes to Diamond High and told his story about a hiking trip gone awry.
Hi, Ben Stream. I'm Mr. Reese's fourth hour. I love his class, you know. I make it a priority. This is something he likes to stress upon us. Every time the bell rings, walks up, okay, class, pull out your journal, write down the date, what we're doing today, and thank you for making this class a priority. Every day. So, this story is, I'm about 8 or 7, you know, Alaska, mountains, trees, moose, bears, oh my. I've lived in Alaska all my life, so this is nothing new to me. But one day in the summer, my friend invites me to his cabin. Now, I'm not sure, but the most Alaska places are the kind of more smaller towns in Alaska, you know. You don't experience the same vibe in Anchorage than you do in some place like Valdez or Seldovia. And my friend's grandparents have a cabin that happened to be in Seldovia, so he invited me there. It was my friend, his dad. My friend's name is Luke, so I'm going to be saying his name a lot in the story. So Luke, his dad, his brother, his grandma and grandpa. So, you know, we're doing Alaskan things, you know, where we're going to. So to get to Seldovia, you have to go to Homer, and then you have to take a boat. So we take a boat. You know, I love boat rides, especially when you're 7 or 8, you know, it's like a tour boat. They kind of go in slow, you know, they show you all the different seabirds and maybe you see some aquatic wildlife, but we make it. And what's even cooler is from Seldovia, you have to take a boat to the cabin. Boats are fun. So we take a boat to the cabin and we're sitting there. I'm staying there about a week. We're doing Alaskan stuff, you know, walking on the beach, messing around with mussels and clams. We're going clamming, we're even fishing, taking a little paddle boat into the lagoon, catching some flounder. It's fun stuff. But you know, one day we're bored of that. So Luke's grandparents' cabin, they live in Alaska, you know, there's this hill, but 78 years old, this ain't no hill, it's a mountain. So hey Luke, yeah? Let's go climb this mountain. So we somehow managed to convince his dad to take us up. So we're climbing, not climbing, there's a trail. But the trail hasn't been used in quite a while, so I'd say it's the pinnacle of rugged Alaska. So we're going on, you know, unkept trail. It was just a trail. But the trees have fallen over because they hadn't been walked in 10 to 15 years, but there's still a visible path to walk. So we're going up, there's Devil's Club, bushes, you know, Alaska, and go through, see some blueberries, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, likes blueberries? Mm-hmm. Bears. Bears like blueberries. So we're hey, we can see a bear. So we're walking up, and there's this, where we kind of stop and start heading down, there's this pond, you know, this pond is pitch black. We look down, we dubbed it Oil Lake. So we're walking around, you know, it's just this perfectly circle pond just sitting there. It's about, it's huge. We look at it, you know, you take a step, you kind of hear the water, the dirt, the mud saturated with the water. You just hear it kind of slush in between your feet when you step. It's the coolest thing. We spent like 5 to 10 minutes just looking at that. Just so mesmerized by this pitch black lake. Eventually, Luke's dad kind of got tired of that, and he said, start heading back. So we start heading back, and there are some obstacles on the way, like several fallen trees have fallen straight across the trail. You know, to Luke's dad, it's like, you know, I'll just help you over, but to us, these things are like up to our necks. So how are we going to get over this? So Luke's dad is helping Luke over, and then right after that, I'm like, you know, I can do this. So I grab over, but Luke's dad said one specific thing. Let me help you up over them. I didn't let him help me up. I started going over. I took a hold of this branch. It snapped. I was gone. It's here. Now I'm there. Falling down this mountain. Silence for a good couple minutes. You know, looking back on it, Luke's dad must have been terrified. staring down. So, you know, I mean, he had given, I was under his supervision, now I'm gone. So I'm sitting there, I'm laying down, you know, this was an Alaskan mountain. There was devils, like, I'm not exaggerating this part, there was devil's club, there was rocks, there was bushes, there was trees. I was fine. just took a little tumble, that's all. Stand up and shout up there, I'm okay! Yeah, and then a couple minutes later, they make it down, we got ice cream. Thank you.
Thanks to Ben for sharing that story. You're listening to In Other News on KNBA 90.3 FM. Ben told that story at a Storyworks Alaska show at Diamond High School.
Our next storyteller, Aurora Belke, goes to Diamond as well and told her story about a dramatic evening with her theater group at Diamond's annual show, Beyond the Bookends.
So I've been doing theater for a really long time, and it's become sort of a part of my life. And I think I've been doing theater for 7 years, which I have determined is the lifespan of a first grader. And if you think about first graders, you know, they think they know everything, and they think they're just so adept to the world, and they're just like, I know it all, but they really don't. So I consider myself sort of in that spot with theater. I'm a theater first grader. So I've been doing Christmas shows especially for a really long time. It's just a really great way to get into the holiday mood for Christmas. And this last year, I couldn't actually be on stage, so I was backstage helping out. And it was for a show called In the Key of Christmas, and it was sort of a Christmas sing-along. It was a super fun show. And I was running crew. So basically, whatever people told me to do, I'd do it, and I'd sort of like run to do it. That's why it's called running crew. And I also watched the kids. And the kids, if you imagine, it's 11 plus theatrically inclined children. It's the most dramatic thing you'll ever experience in your life. Like, there was more drama in that room than in Kim Kardashian's life, I swear. And they were just crazy. They were antsy, and they hated being in this one confined room for an hour plus. And you know, you hear the figure of speech, oh, she's jumping off of the walls, but there was this one kid who would literally jump off of the walls. Like, she would climb up the wall and jump off of it. I don't know how she did it. I had no control of the whole affair at all. It was crazy. And that just sort of captures the spirit of that show and how chaotic it was. We only had to evacuate the building twice. One time because there was what we thought was a gas leak, and us being over dramatic theater people, we all thought we were gonna die, and we thought that this gas was just gonna like get inside of us, and we were all freaking out, but it turns out it was actually just sewage under our stage. One of the pipes had broken and there was sewage under our stage. And the other time is the evacuation I wanna talk about now. So it was after a two-show day, and actors, after two-show days, get really just grumpy. They're not very fun to be around. They, you know, they're in costume all day, and they're exhausted, they're sweaty, and their costumes are uncomfortable, they're hot, and they're hungry because they're not allowed to eat all day, and, you know, they have to keep their heads perfectly straight so they don't mess up their hair and makeup. So, needless to say, they get pretty salty. So I was, the actors were all getting changed, and I was cleaning up in my room. And a mom comes in, and she's like, "Hey, so it's my daughter's birthday today, and I brought some food for all the actors." And so a couple of other technical helpers, also known as techies, happily dubbed by us, go over to the dressing rooms and knock on all the doors. And I was still in our green room cleaning up. And I look out the doors, and all of a sudden, I just see all of these actors running by. And in the notion of food, they just sort of stopped getting changed wherever they were. So, you know, there were a lot of kids in just camis and shorts, and many of them were barefooted. Mm-hmm. And they're just running by screaming, "Food!" And they're making it all completely dramatic, because they're actors. And we get out. I finish cleaning up, and I get out, and I go to get some food as well, and most of it is gone, of course. So the actors are just shoving their faces, and then halfway through shoving their faces, they're like, "Huh, it's someone's birthday. Let's acknowledge that, maybe." So the mom gets out the cake, and we light the cake, and we turn off all of the lights in the lobby, and we sing "Happy Birthday" in a four-part harmony, because that's how theater people roll. And it was just a really nice experience. Everyone was super close, and they were all hugging. And so the birthday girl closes her eyes and goes to make a wish, and she goes to blow out the candles. But the candles don't blow out. So she's sort of confused, and she tries to blow out the candles again and again, but no matter what she does, they just don't blow out. And everyone's like, "Huh. Huh, they're trick candles." So we're all cracking up. We think it's so funny. But the fire alarm didn't think it was funny. So the fire alarm went off. And since this is a college campus, the fire alarm calls the fire department right away. So they were already on their way. And we had to evacuate the building. And keep in mind, these actors are minimally clothed. And they're grumpy after this two-show day, and they're like, "I don't need this." So they're all running outside on this cold December night. It was like 9 o'clock, and the snow was just falling, and it was a really beautiful night without all of the chaotic stuff happening. And I remember specifically there was one girl who was wearing jazz shoes, and jazz shoes, it's a big taboo to go outside in jazz shoes. So she goes to take a step outside, and an adult comes and just sweeps her off her feet to save the jazz shoes, not her. And we're all just running outside, and the actors are in the snow, and they're like, "Oh!" And because their feet are just burning from the snow. And so then, I don't know how it happened, but we all sort of came up with the unanimous decision to just give each other piggyback rides, because all of the people with shoes were like, "Yeah, I can just give you piggyback rides." So everyone with shoes is leaning down, and people are just jumping onto each other's backs. There's adults on adults' backs, adults on kids' backs, kids on adults' backs. It was crazy. And we look like a battle, or an army marching to battle. And we're all just running and screaming and yelling at 9 o'clock at night. And we run into the building next door, and we take a head count. And we realize one person is missing, and we're like, "That's not good. Like, did they die? Did we set a fire? Are they going to burn? Like, who's gonna take their role?" I mean, we need that role, it's important. So finally, we see her off in the foggy, snowy distance, running with the birthday cake in her hands. And she even thought of bringing plates and forks and knives. She was prepared. So she runs through the doors with the birthday cake. And I'll remember these words for a really long time. She runs through the doors, and she says, very overdramatically, because we're actors, she says, "No fire alarm is going to prevent us from eating our cake." And we all are just cheering, and we all take slices of cake, and we're eating our cake, and we're watching the firemen running in and out of the building. And it was just a very, I don't want to say peaceful, even though it sort of was, but it was just a really nice affair, all of it. And it sort of made me realize my place. And, you know, I was happy because it was my theater family, and that's where I belonged. Thank you.
That was Aurora Belke, and you're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute, live on KNBA 90.3 FM, Anchorage.
Next up, we have Carter Moore, who is going to share about the time he humiliated himself in front of his dad and the entire basketball team.
So my story is about the most embarrassing experience of my entire life. And it takes place in sixth grade, and it starts when I had my friend Aiden over to spend the night one night. So that night, Aiden and I were having fun. We were just hanging out, playing in the yard. But eventually, it got time to go to sleep. So we went to bed, and we started talking. And an important part of this story is that sixth grade was kind of the first year like I started liking girls and like started noticing girls. It was a really awkward time. So Aiden and I got to talking about this, and what we settled on doing that night was giving ourselves a large pink Sharpie heart tattoo on our arms, inside of it with the name of the girl we both liked. And we settled on this because we weren't going to talk to the girls, obviously. And we couldn't text them either because our parents read all of our texts. So, next best thing, Sharpie tattoo. So anyways, it was permanent, so it was going to stick around for a while. And I had basketball practice a couple days later, and my dad is the coach of our basketball team. So basketball practice was going fine. I was shooting great in warm-ups. Drills were awesome. But then it's time to scrimmage. So my dad breaks us up into teams. I was ready to play, and he goes, "All right, guys, shirts and skins." And I was ecstatic, because I was ready to show off my awesome sixth grade six pack, and I had no recollection of this being on my arm. So I go to my stuff and I whip my shirt off, throw it, and I walk back kind of cocky towards the court. Take about 5 steps and my dad goes, "What is that on your arm?" And I just froze. I didn't know what to do. I just, for a few seconds, I just kind of stood there. And when I finally got my wits about me, I did the logical thing and ran out the gym. And I went straight to the water fountain, and I spent a solid 5 minutes trying to scrub this off my arm, and it didn't come off. So I had to go back into the gym, and I begged my dad to let me play on shirts. He said, "No, you did this dumb thing. You're playing skins." So I went on for another hour and a half with this awful thing on my arm. My whole team makes fun of me. Our assistant coach is trying to snap pictures. So I stayed on the left side of the court, kind of like this the whole time. And I remember when practice got over, the only thing I cared about was, "Oh God, I hope Mom doesn't find out." So I begged my dad the entire car ride, just please don't tell Mom, please don't tell Mom. So we settled on, all right, if you can get it out, you don't have to tell her, or I won't tell her. So my parents went out to dinner that night, and I spent an hour in the bathtub with a sponge just scrubbing until I bled, and I finally got it out. And she never found out until recently when I told her this. Her reaction was, "Oh, how cute." Yeah, this girl still doesn't know. And if I wasn't awkward about girls already, I definitely was afterwards. So thank you.
Thanks, Carter. I'm Maeve Wiley.
And I'm Ryan Iverson.
And you're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute.
Grace Schutte is a student at Diamond High. She told her story at the Diamond High Storyworks show, Beyond the Bookends. Her story brings to life a traumatic experience while camping with her softball team in Homer, Alaska.
So this is the time where I learned to run faster without actually having to run. So I've been playing softball for about 6 years now, and I've always been what you considered like medium. I've never been slow, but I've never been super like fast. And my softball coaches decided that they'd come up with a nickname for me, and it was Waddles, which they would switch out with Shuffles when they felt like it. So, you know, really good confidence booster. So anyways, about a year ago, I was camping down in Homer, Alaska with some friends and family. And my friends and I were all in our camper, my camper, and we're playing cards, and we're eating these really old suckers. And they're like, the sugar's all coated and white, and it's really crunchy and pretty gross, but it's the only sugar we had around, so we put up with it. Anyway, so we're eating these really gross suckers and playing cards, and I realize my stomach is hurting. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's just a really gross sucker. So I put it down, and I keep playing cards. But like 15 minutes later, I'm like, wow, my stomach still hurts, and if anything, it's a little bit more persistent. So I decide, I'll quit the game. So I put my cards down, and I go lie down in my parents' bed. And a couple hours pass, and I'm still not feeling that good. And I'm just kind of getting frustrated. I'm like, Why now? Like, I'm on this camping trip in Homer, and I love it here. This is like my favorite place to go camping, and all my friends are out having fun and going on the beach, and I'm just here lying in my parents' bed, like suffering in my pain by myself, and it's just like, this really sucks. I was getting frustrated and kind of angry, and then now it's dinner time, and I am definitely not having any of this. I am on the couch. I'm kind of rocking back and forth. I'm crying a little bit. I probably look really pitiful, but it was a lot of pain. And I call my mom, and I'm shaking, and I sound like a five-year-old. I'm like, Mom, something's wrong. My stomach really hurts, and I just don't know what's wrong. It's been hurting for so long. I don't know what's up. Can you please just come and check it out? And she's like, yeah, okay, I'm coming. And she brings with her my grandma, who's a retired nurse. So now my grandma, she's asking me all these medical questions, and I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh, God, I don't know. I don't know. Like, if I answer any of these questions wrong, my whole diagnosis will be altered. And she's like, when was your last menstrual cycle? Does it hurt when I press down or lift up? And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. And so I'm all like freaked out, like my diagnosis is gonna be completely wrong. And her diagnosis though was that she didn't have one because she didn't have enough equipment. So there went that. And all she said though was that I could take some Advil and just try to sleep it off. And that worked for a little bit until about 3 a.m. I wake up in miraculous pain. And I'm gonna try and describe it. There's really no way to do this correctly, but this is what I was thinking. I imagine this water balloon that's inside my abdomen. And this water balloon is filled with really cold, sparkling water mixed with poison. And this water balloon has holes in it. So, you know, it's like, it's just sitting there and it's just seeping into my guts. And it's like, oh my God, that hurts a lot. And I was like, okay, I don't know. I'm just gonna go to the bathroom. Like, I don't know what else I can do. But as soon as my feet hit the ground, I thought I was gonna throw up. So I ran to the bathroom and I'm dry heaving into the toilet, but nothing's coming out because I haven't eaten in so long. And that's kind of a big deal. Like, that might not seem like a big, like, thing, but it is, because I love eating, so I eat all the time. And anyway, so once I'm done doing that, I lean back against the wall of the bathroom, and I'm just sitting there. I'm like, this must be what it's like to die. Like, I'm dying. I'm not going to see tomorrow. This is it. I'm going to die in Home, Alaska. And so now that I'm convinced I'm dying, I will be dead in a couple of hours, I start thinking about all the things I'll never do or never get to do again, like hang out with my friends, play softball, go to high school. I was 14 at the time. Oh my God, I was 14. Okay. And go to high school. I said that, but go to college, get married, have kids, or be that really cool grandma who gives their kids the car when their parents say no. Like, that was like, that's one of my ultimate goals in life. And then I was like, wait, no, I'm going to get to do all these things. I will achieve these goals. So I prayed to God for strength, and I woke up my mom and said, Mom, something's wrong. We have to go to the hospital. And she said, yes, we got my dad up and we drove there. Now it's 4 a.m. and I am, you know, still like hobbling over because I can't really walk because I'm like throwing up, dry heaving. It's really gross. But when I get to the hospital, they gave me my like nightgown, and then they gave me these blue fuzzy socks. And I'm kind of trying to replicate it with these, but they're not the same. But they were like the best thing. Like, I have never been so sentimentally attached to an article of clothing, but these were like the best socks I've ever worn. They were like fuzzy and blue and like little slipper insoles on the bottom, and it was just fantastic. And so now I'm lying in my hospital bed, and another doctor comes in, and she's asking all these questions, like my grandma was. But this time she comes up with a diagnosis, and she says appendicitis. Now I'm all drugged up on morphine, so I think she says something like apple popsicle or something like that, something completely wrong. But I'm like, oh yeah, apple popsicle. Yeah, that's not too bad. I can survive apple popsicle. And then my mom, the doctor keeps talking, and she's, the one word she says that I comprehend is the word surgery. Now, I probably would have freaked out a lot more if I had had time, because sure enough, one CAT scan, PET scan, something scan later, I am in surgery. And by 12 o'clock, I wake up and I have 3 1-inch scars on my abdomen. And that's it. Like, I'm eating ice, and ice is like the best thing you could ever eat after surgery. And I'm by 12:30, I'm in the camper again, lying on the couch, I'm eating fudge, and I'm drinking this like chai tea. Oh my gosh, I love chai tea now after this whole epidemic. It's like my favorite thing to drink. That and like have fuzzy blue slipper socks. But and my friends are all there, and they're giving me little gifts they bought for me at the spit, and they're showing me pictures of my name written in the sand. And my mom is giving me these little updates on her Facebook post. And I'm just kind of basking on this popularity. I'm like, wow, appendicitis isn't that bad at all. And I'm like, hold up. Because then I learned this afterwards, after I thought this. And it turns out my appendix hadn't even burst yet. It was in the process of rupturing. So I could have been in there for a lot longer, and that could have been a lot worse than it actually was. But thankfully it wasn't. But one of the main highlights of this whole trip, besides the socks and the ice and the chai tea and some other things, I remember distinctively one the comments on my mom's post, and it was from my softball coach, and it said, "You run faster now, right?" "Yeah, coach, 0.56 ounces faster." Thank you. All right.
Thanks, Grace. This is In Other News on KNBA. We're featuring true personal stories told by Anchorage youth.
Our next story comes from Kayla Aurelio. She originally told this at Diamond High School's annual Storyworks Alaska show, Beyond the Bookends. Her story involves a suspected haunting.
So, maybe ghosts are real, maybe they're not. It was the summer after sixth grade, so I was about 12, and I have two younger siblings, a brother and a sister, and they were about 4 and 3 at the time. And my parents were gonna go on vacation to California for a couple of weeks. So they decided that our family friends would come and babysit us at the house. And our family friends were Vanessa and her younger siblings, and they were a couple years older than me, so about high school, middle school age, and Vanessa was around 20 years old at the time. And so one night, we're all in the living room, and they're at the fireplace. And they call me over and they're like, "Kayla, come take a look at this." And I'm like, "Okay." They're like, "What's in the fireplace?" I'm like, "I don't know." So I take a flashlight, and inside the fireplace, there is a giant footprint. And I'm talking giant, like size 20, if that's even a thing. It's a footprint, not a shoe print. 5 toes, not 6. And I'm like, "Okay, like how did this get inside the fireplace? Like, Santa? Is it Santa? It's July. Like, why so early?" And so I'm just like, "Okay, I just don't want to think about it. I put it off." So because my parents were gone, we watched a bunch of scary movies because when my parents were around, I was 12. They didn't want me watching a bunch of scary movies and like getting paranoid and scared of ghosts. So we were watching scary movies. And we were watching The Ring. And if you've ever seen The Ring, at the beginning, the girl gets a phone call. She picks it up. No one's at the end of the line. They call again, and it's her mom. So after we'd already seen that part, the phone rings. It's like 11 o'clock. I'm like, "Okay, hello?" No one's there. Put the phone down. Rings again. I'm like, "Hello? It's my mom from California." And I'm like, "No freaking way. This just happened in the movie. I have a week to live." And I couldn't cope with it because I was 12. I didn't get married. I didn't have children. I didn't go to an Ivy League college. My life was a disappointment. I didn't know what to do. I was like, "What am I going to do? I can't do anything." So I was just extremely disappointed. And I was just like, you know, we all have a week to live, so what are we gonna do? But a couple days later, I'm sitting on my couch with my sister, and she starts pointing at the doorway, and she starts crying. So I turn, I'm like, "There's nothing there, what's wrong?" I'm like, "Okay, this is really creeping me out, because, you know, sometimes kids can see things that adults can't." So there must have been some supernatural force, and I was just, "Okay, my house is probably haunted. From the footprints to this, something is definitely wrong." And now my brother, okay, he starts acting pretty weird too. He's all isolated from everyone. He won't talk to anybody. And I'm like, "He's not usually like this, so what's going on?" So the next day, I'm going up the stairs, and I see my brother in his room, and I swear on my life, his eyes were just fully black. And, okay, normal kids, their eyes aren't fully black. You know, something's wrong, he's possessed. And we all believed this. I told them everything, and they're like, "Okay, you're right, your brother's possessed, we have to do something about it." So, we did research, you know? Google, how to perform an exorcism. And me being logical, I'm like, you know, we go to church every Sunday. So if I take a picture of Jesus and show it to my brother, he won't freak out, right? So I call him into my room. I'm like, "Come here." I pull out a picture of Jesus, shove it in his face, he starts bawling. I'm like, "I'm convinced you're possessed, get away from me. I was not about to get possessed, it's just no." And so part of our research was that salting windowsills and doorways would keep ghosts and spirits out and like demons. And I was like, "Okay, we're doing this." We salt all the windowsills, we salt the downstairs, we salt upstairs, and my upstairs is all carpet, so there was just salt everywhere on the carpet. We salted the backyard, the front yard, so much salt. We made crosses out of barbecue sticks and tied them together with red ribbon because red supposedly kept ghosts away. I would wear red every day of the week. I only had like two red shirts, so I would just alternate because I did not want to get possessed by any ghosts. Eventually, my parents came back and I told them everything. I'm like, you need to get the house blessed. Please, I don't want to be anywhere near my brother. He's possessed, it's not him. And they're just like, you're crazy. I'm like, okay, suit yourself, but I'm not going anywhere near your son and there's a demon inside him. But eventually, a couple months later, after the whole incident, I was still, you know, like, sketched about the house. But my mom is in my sibling's room and she pulls up the window and she sees all the salt. She calls me in there, she's like, Kayla, what is this? She's completely unamused. I'm like, oh, remember a couple months ago when I thought that the house was haunted? And she's like, clean this up. But to this day, I still don't fully trust my brother, and when creepy things happen in my house, I'm still convinced that the ghost is still there. So, thank you.
Wow, thank you, Kayla. That was Kayla Aurelio, and you're listening to In Other News on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage.
Next up is Jack Anders, who ends up sending an unintended message at his mother's triathlon.
The Gold Nugget Triathlon. It's the largest triathlon in Alaska, ran solely by women. And my mom's pretty athletic. She loves to run. She's just recently started getting into biking. And she and a couple of her friends thought it'd be fun to do this triathlon. And it started to become a really big deal for her. And it's an extremely hard triathlon to get into because the spots fill up in about 5 minutes after it goes online. And so she made it in, and she was incredibly happy, and the whole summer she'd been training for this run, or this triathlon. And for the moms who had done this triathlon in the past, for them it was kind of a tradition that they would go out the night before and have a good time, just the moms, and they'd strategize for the triathlon. The families at home stayed home and decorated the bike stands. It's kind of, some moms just like to have their name just so, you know, just kind of modest. But then other moms, you know, like to have a funny nickname or something that is specialized just to them. And my mom thought of a nickname that she had came up with about 3 years ago in Park City, Utah, when we were skiing. Me, my brother, and my dad, we're pretty good skiers, but she, on the other hand, she's not too good. She's only been skiing for about a year, but she was going down a green circle, and for any skiers out there, they know that that's pretty much the easiest trail out there. She was going down, and me and my brother and my dad were waiting at the bottom of the hill for her. And, you know, to her, she thinks she's just flying down. She's going a million miles an hour. And she gets down to the bottom of the hill, and she's like, whew, that was great. I'm a flaming mama. So that was her nickname. That she liked, Flamin' Mama. And, you know, to her kids and her husband, that's kind of weird to call your mom a Flamin' Mama. But, you know, to her, that's just what she wanted to be called. And so we thought it'd be funny if we put on her bike stand, Flamin' Mama. We spent that night doing the bike stand, but then the day of the triathlon, in the morning, we got another idea. We thought it'd be good to make signs for her. And we could bike out on the trail and have music and just have a really good time cheering on all these women who are working really hard to finish this triathlon. And so we wrote on the signs, Go Flamin' Mama. And we got them all in order in the backpack. And so we got the truck all loaded up with all the bikes, everything. We were all set. This was going to be a great time. So we drove out to Bartlett where the race was, and we biked out on this long, dusty, hot tank trail. And, I mean, it's pretty much the most boring setting you could ever imagine. Like, it's literally a straight road with dust. That's all you see. And so, you know, again, we thought this was going to be really fun and happy for all these women. So we got out there, we got the music set up, and we were all happy. And, you know, of course, sibling love. Me and my brother started to fight about the music. And then the speaker battery, it started to get low and it was about to die. And so my dad got super mad, and it was just a bad experience. And so we were all panicked, and through all this chaos, my brother is just like, "Ah, there she is, I see her. And so my dad gets the iPhone set up with the self-timer so we can get a picture with us holding up the signs, and my mom running in the background. And we get the iPhone set up, we get out the signs, and we're all smiles on our faces. And there's a couple women in front of her. And as they pass us, they have, you know, they're happy that we're playing music and we're out there supporting our family member, but they have kind of a weird look on their face. Then my mom comes by, and, you know, she's happy to see us, she's waving, but she too has a weird look on her face, and, you know, we didn't expect that. And we thought, oh, she's probably just tired, she just wants to get done with this race. And so we rode along with her a little bit, then we split up and let her finish, and we met her at the finish line. And she, you know, she was talking about her race, all the highlights, all the downsides of it, but the one thing she brought up was the signs, and she was kind of confused about them. She was like, what are your signs mean? And we were like, Flamin' Mama, you know, the nickname. And she said, I don't think that's what they said. And we looked on the iPhone, because my dad did get a photo. And on the iPhone, we got everything all messed up. We were all out of order, and we ended up calling our mother a Mama Flamingo. Mama Flamingo. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Jack, for sharing that with us. That was Jack Anders, and you're listening to In Other News on KNBA.
Our next story comes from Diamond High student Nico Latva-Kiskola. He tells us about his ill-fated Boy Scout career.
My story begins, so at about 8 years old, I was absolutely avid with activities. My dad put me in about every sport possible, just so I could experiment and see what worked for me. So some of them I liked, others I really disliked. And one of the activities I was put in was Boy Scouts. And let me just say, I was horrible in it. Like, I liked Girl Scout cookies far more than the Boy Scouts popcorn. I could hardly even tie my own shoes compared to tie like a slip knot or a sailor's knot. And I was always late to the meetings. I never showed up to any of the activities. And overall, I was just a horrible Boy Scout. And then eventually one activity came up that I was actually like legitimately excited for. And it was a camping trip over at Kincaid Park. And I was like, okay, this is something that I'm excited for. I'm gonna hear that they're gonna do s'mores and, you know, sit next to a campfire and have tents and everything. And I was like, okay, let's go. So I get my bag packed. I have a orange backpack with s'mores in it. I think I even brought like a fishing pole. We weren't going fishing. But I had everything prepared. I had a tent as well. It was an orange REI one, and I was ready. And we get in the white Suburban, and it veers off through the driveway, and we're driving over to Kincaid, and we get there, and there's no one there. And we go over to the chalet, and we go to the person up in the front, and I was like, hey, is there a Boy Scouts thing here? Oh, yeah, that was yesterday. You saw the light in my eyes just completely burn out, and I was like devastated. And then you see my dad, and a light ignites with him, and his eyes open up, and I'm like, somebody has an idea. And I look at my dad, and I'm like, what do you want to do? And he's like, I have an idea. And he says, let's go camping over at our hunting friend's house, Tim. Let's just go over there in his backyard and let's go camping. Sure, that's a great idea. So we decide to go over to our hunting friend's house, Tim, and he has a crazy backyard. It's really wooded, it has pines everywhere. It had a tree house, it had a huge garden, and it was like very secluded. We're like, yeah, this is perfect. So we go there, it's late at night already, and we get there, and I still wanted s'mores. We're camping, come on. So we have the s'mores, and then we set up the orange REI tent, and we have this black paracord, and we hook it up to this pine tree, and we wrap it around, and then we finally brush our teeth, and we go to bed. Or I thought. So not very long into the night, I heard this noise. It was ridiculous, and I was like, Dad, come on, I'm trying to sleep here. And my dad gets up, and what? Well, it's not my dad. And this noise kept growing louder and louder, and it was, whoa, whoa, whoa. My dad's like, I hear that too. And he's like, oh, okay, it must be Tim. He's joking around with us. He's out there, he's acting like he's making a moose noise. You know, Tim's a jokester. He's out there doing that. And the noise keeps getting louder. Whoa, whoa. Hey, Tim, stop joking around. Come on. And then, whoa, whoa. And my dad's like, okay, Tim, that's enough. He opens the tent, gets out, and he sees a moose with a 50-inch rack plus right in front of him, 5 feet away. Turns back around, runs into the tent, knocks me over, and we're in the tent now, just shaking with fear, with this moose that's right outside of our tent, and he loops around and goes to that wire that we set up and starts putting his antlers on it and starts scratching himself. He had some itch or something. He starts moving the tent around and you hear this obnoxious noise throughout the... And we're in there, we're just shaking, and somehow, I don't know how, we end up going to bed, and we wake up in the morning and there was actually two moose, but they were a little farther off, luckily. And we tell the story to Tim and he was in tears, but... after that event, a week after, I quit Boy Scouts because I found out that hanging out with my dad and camping with him was way more fun anyways.
Thank you, Nico, for sharing that with us. That was Nico Latva-Kiskola. I'm Ryan Iverson.
And I'm Maeve Wiley.
And you're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage.
Thanks to all the storytellers on this show. This episode of In Other News goes out to Storyworks Alaska, a program dedicated to supporting youth voice. Find out more at storyworksak.org.
We'd like to thank all of you for listening. If you would like to share stories or make great radio as well, join ATME. Find us online and listen to past stories at alaskateenmedia.org.
Tune into the next broadcast of In Other News on Saturday, December 24th at 4 p.m. right here on KNBA 90.3 FM. On that show, we'll feature the best stories we made in 2016. Thanks for listening and have a fun and safe night.